Thank you for listening to this Podcast One Sportsnet production, available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
All right, gang, thanks for the download button on the Steve Austin Show Unleashed. And thanks for supporting the great sponsors who let me do this for you free twice a week. And that includes Diamond Dallas Page and DDP Yoga. If you are looking to change your life, get on the path to healthier living, then get yourself on the DDP Yoga program. And right now, Dallas is giving all you guys a great deal. If you go to ddpyoga.com/Austin, you get a great price on DDP Yoga, and you get 3 free months of the DDP Yoga Now app. It's available for iPhones and Android, and both versions are getting great reviews. Folks, this app is money. Dallas has done thought of everything. It's badass. You can do live workouts from the DDP Yoga Performance Center. You can access recipes, cooking demonstrations, and nutrition guides. And you can do it all from your phone. He's got rewards programs built into the app, too. You get points for the yoga you do, and then you can redeem those points for special rewards and DDP merchandise. Dallas has given you every single thing you need to get on a path to healthier living, and he's making it as easy as possible. So get the DDP Yoga program at ddpyoga.com/Austin and take advantage of the 3 free months of the badass DDP Yoga Now app. Like Dallas always says, all you got to do is commit. So make that commitment now at ddpyoga.com/Austin.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He started in a small town in Texas. Worked his ass off to become one of the most famous wrestlers of all time.
We're going to take care of business tonight, and that's the bottom line.
And now, he's dominating the world of on-demand audio.
And he's doing it for the working man.
This is a damn good outlet for me to spew the bullshit off my brain.
Yeah!
This is the Steve Austin Show. Unleashed.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. I am coming to you from the main streets of Los Angeles, California. Sitting here in my office at 316 Gimmick Street, looking out there in the yard. Today's Wednesday, and literally a few minutes, my guys that do my yard will come in here with the blowers blowing. They'll crank up the weed eater, start that lawnmower, and start raising all kinds of living hell. So I figured, Steve, since you're so damn smart, allegedly, why don't you do your podcast open, close, and do all your reads before they get here and fuck all your shit up? Maybe that way, without all the commotion, discombobulation, and bullshit, this podcast might win a goddamn award. So anyway, I don't think that somebody's going to win an award, but I'm doing all this stuff earlier, so you guys ain't going to put up with all that bullshit. All the only bullshit I'm putting up with is Mula, the silver lab in here. She wants to play with her strings. She wants to play with the ball. She keeps getting on my desk. I think she wants to do a podcast. Next time I do another Unleashed podcast, I might record her and have a conversation with her. But today's podcast is me talking to Enzo Amore and Big Cass. Cass down there from the NXT experience down there in Orlando, Florida. They came over to my room, and we started rolling sound about 9 a.m., like I alluded to on last Tuesday's show when I started pumping them up. Man, that's about the earliest I've ever podcasted in my life. I picked a bad day to quit amphetamines, but it was good to talk to those guys, two young cats with a bright future in this business. Hey, as I look back, I'll probably try to break down WrestleMania in the next few days. Maybe I'll break it down with Wade Keller over the weekend. I have not watched the event back. But I'll tell you one thing. Right before I went to that NXT show that was in Dallas, Texas that night, and they had a sold-out venue. There was about 10,000 people there. It was a pretty damn good show. I'll go into some of the matches later on a podcast, but I was impressed with the crowd, impressed with the work that was done in the ring. And I'll tell you what, I started looking around. I had to go out and get something to eat that night, and I had been trapped in that hotel for several days. I think I was there for 5 goddamn days. And I tell you what, if you're coming from all over the world to get the WrestleMania experience, it's a thrill of a lifetime, and some of you will only do it once in a lifetime. But I've been to so damn many, sometimes when you get trapped in that hotel, you get to start going crazy. And I'm already crazy enough to begin with. But I'll tell you what, old Ted Fowler gave Kristen and myself this collapsible, portable Yeti cooler, and I had that thing chock full of Broken Skull IPA. So I loaded 4 of them up in basically like a trash bag, and I filled up two Ziploc bags with some ice. I made like a redneck cooler because I didn't want to take my Yeti cooler out there in case that something's got stolen or something. And I was heading down to the green room to get into a car that was going to take me down to a place called Dakota Steakhouse. Now, Dakota Steakhouse was only 0.1, was it a tenth of a mile away from the hotel. But I figured, man, with as many fans from around the world descending upon the great city of Dallas and the great state of Texas, I might get swarmed and have to sign a bunch of autographs and take pictures. And I was in a hurry because the NXT show was going to start at 9 p.m. and I had a 7:15 reservation. So anyway, I figured, you know, it's just me. What if I call my buddy, Kevin Nash, and see if he's got time to go down there and get a swig of steak? Well, get a bite of steak and a swig of some wine. And I called him, and he had just got finished doing an appearance. He goes, bro, he goes, I need to take a shower, but I'd love to go with you. I said, I'll tell you what, man, as you jump your big ass in the shower, I'll hold the ride for about 10, 15 minutes, and we'll go down there and grab us a steak. So anyway, here comes Big Kev. Man, he's looking like $1 million. I think he was clocking in, I don't know, about 280-ish. Had the 21-inch guns going, a lot of vascularity. Brother's been in the gym, and he's been doing his cardio, and he's been watching his diet. But on this illustrious night, we would descend upon Dakota Steakhouse, and I ordered a big-ass ribeye. He got the 24-ounce porterhouse. I got a double margarita, and then we launched into what we always drink when we always get together, the Pirate. It's a Cabernet Sauvignon, and by the time, what's that? The Prisoner. Goddamn, I messed up the name of it. My wife called me out on it. We ordered a couple of bottles of The Prisoner, a Cabernet Sauvignon, and I don't know what they jacked to it. I know the street price is pretty damn reasonable. They add a hell of a damn lot of money when they serve that stuff in a restaurant. So, hell, by the time we got finished chowing down a steak and a couple bottles of wine, I think our tab was about $450, and that was before the tip. So anyway, Kev, it was great shooting the breeze with you, getting caught up. Man, to Dakota Steakhouse, give you a shout-out. The food was premier. All the staff and the people that worked there were awesome. Anita was the person that waited on us. She was awesome. General manager took real good care of us. Impeccable service, impeccable food. Shout-out to Dakota Steakhouse. If you're downtown in Dallas, Texas, next time you roll through there, I recommend that as being a damn good place to go in and get a steak. If you bring your own bottle of The Prisoner, that way you might just pay corkage fee and save your ass a little chunk of change. Good time seeing my buddy Kevin Nash down there at WrestleMania. It'll probably be another year before I see him again. It looks like he's getting ready for another part in another movie. Brother has stayed busy. And then I went down to the NXT show and watched Shinsuke Nakamura and Sami Zayn have a hell of a damn, about 50-50 style match. Watched Asuka and Bayley go out there. You know, both of them are actually babyface matches. The crowd, you know, was really loud, vocal. I think they really dug the action. I'm continuing to be impressed with the NXT movement. But, again, I've talked about that enough. Let's get on and get ready for my conversation with Big Cass and Enzo Amore because you can't teach that. And that being said, it was real sad for me on Thursday night because I was so excited to talk to my good friend Mick Foley on the Stone Cold podcast on the WWE Network, and you can still view that podcast on the network or listen to it in the archives in the library here at Podcast One. But I missed the season finale of Redneck Island. Man, I've been live tweeting, supporting that show. I also missed Broken Skull Challenge on Sunday as that was a travel day back to Los Angeles, California. Anyway, these shows, Redneck Island is over. We will see if they greenlight it again for another season. Broken Skull Challenge rolls on. I just got finished doing an interview with Harvey Levin and the guys over there at TMZ. If you go to TMZ.com, you can check out the interview. Sitting here at my crib at 316 Gimmick Street, and we talk about Broken Skull Challenge and about how tough that show is. It's whoop-ass TV. It's its finest. It's the toughest show on television, and proud to say that you can catch his show still every single Sunday on CMT Network at 8, 7 Central. I've got to get on my DVR and watch what happened this past week. But anyway, hey, man, for everything Steve Austin, T-shirts, caps, beer, Cold Steel knives, Broken Skull IPA, go to BrokenSkullRanch.com, and that's the bottom line. You can also find them T-shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com, but enough of that bullshit. Let's get on with the program so I can get down to conversation with Enzo Amore and Big Cass from NXT. Hey, folks, golf's first major tournament starts this week, and you can play one-week fantasy golf for free at DraftKings.com. It's as easy as everything else you already playing at DraftKings. Just pick six golfers before tee-off on Thursday morning. Stay under the salary cap and then rack up points for streaks, per hole performance, and tournament finishes. Outscore your competition and win yourself some big money. And you can play more than fantasy golf at DraftKings. You can also play fantasy MMA. And I know you people are MMA fans. It works the same way. Pick fighters, stay under the salary cap, and get points for strikes, knockdowns, takedowns, and knockouts. And then just sit back and collect your cash. Put your sports knowledge to work at DraftKings.com and get in on the winnings. Millions of sports fans are already doing that very thing. Fantasy golf contests start when the tournaments tee off, so get to DraftKings now and choose your golfers and use my promo code Steve to play for free. That's promo code Steve to play for free right now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. This ain't fantasy as usual. This is DraftKings.
Steve Austin, Unleashed.
Unleashed.
Yeah, man, I tell you what, sitting here with Enzo Amore and Big Cass, and we just here shooting a breeze, telling some stories from back in the old days when I started. Dinosaurs are still roaming the earth. Hey, man, well, good morning, guys. I want you guys to know that this is the earliest damn podcast I've done in the history of the illustrious Steve Austin Show. Welcome to the Shizzo.
Oh, hell yeah.
You guys are the younger generation. You know what Shizzo means, right? And that's carny for show.
Oh, yeah.
Copacetic?
We're in on it, yeah.
Okay. Hey, I dig you guys' entrance. Enzo, would you go ahead and introduce yourself?
My name is Enzo Amore, and I am a certified G and a bona fide stud, and you can't teach that. And this right here is Big Cass, and he's sitting down, but when he stands up, he's 7 foot tall, and you can't teach that. Bada boom, realest guy in Austin's hotel room. How you doing?
How you doing? You got something to add on top of that, Big Cash?
Well, I just got to say, if anybody's not listening to this podcast, well, then there's only one word to describe them, and that's S-A-W-F-T,
Swift. Hey, man, let me go to a little background information on you guys, because, man, Enzo, I'm sitting here looking at your credentials here on Wikipedia. Hey, as X-Pac would say, that's trade secrets.
Oh.
Dude, tell me about the football background you got, because before you got into the business, you was a football player, Division III at Salisbury University.
Yeah.
Y'all were the Fighting Seagulls. I sent him a text. I said, the Seagulls? Are you ribbing me?
Oh, man.
Now, what's Salisbury? Salisbury, Maryland?
Yep. We're out there on the eastern shore of Maryland.
Okay, now how far is Salisbury from the water? Because it's got to be close if you're going
right
to really
there,
truly represent the seagull.
Exactly.
Seagulls ain't inland.
Oh, man, let's just say I had too good of a time in college because I was right on the ocean.
Because as soon as I saw Salisbury University, I'm thinking, man, what is there? Because we were the Edna Cowboys back in my high school days. We was the Eagles in my college days. So I'm sort of thinking, man, don't let it be the Salisbury Steaks. Because they're going to get ate up every single Saturday.
We sizzling out there, man.
Linebacker and safety, what kind of speed you got? Don't lie to me.
I'll tell you what. Okay, you could put me out there on the kickoff team.
Yeah.
With Deion Sanders, and I'm beating him down the field straight into the wedge.
Right.
That was my MO. So I was a decent guy. You know, I wasn't lightning out there, but on kickoff, man, I mean, I was a defensive starter, and there weren't many of us that wanted to do kickoff.
Right.
They knew I had this job called Bullet. So you got a 9-man kickoff. You got the kicker who kicks the ball down the field.
And usually and then there's this the flying
one,
F.
Then there's this one,
nobody.
There's this one schmuck called the Bullet who just runs down the field and picks a lane. Well, basically, I pick my victim before the play even kicks off the tee, and I would just run down there like a lunatic. And then one day I met my maker, and you know, changed my career from there on out. But
how'd you meet Jamaica? What happened? Big collision?
You ever heard of a stinger in football?
Oh, I had a bunch of them.
Oh, yeah. I had one of them stingers that leaves you paralyzed on your right side for a few weeks. So,
so that was it? Did you make 4 years out of it? Because you ended up getting a degree, right?
Yeah. No, I missed the tail end of my junior year, and then I came back my senior year, started every game. You know, I probably shouldn't have been playing at all. I had to change the way I played, started hit with my left shoulder, not my right. But I wasn't backing down, you know what I mean? So I wasn't going to miss the last year that I was ever going to play ball.
So, dude, you got a degree in journalism?
Oh, yeah.
What do you do with a degree in journalism? Are you going to write newspapers or what?
No, well, I did write for the school newspaper. I'm actually like a jack of all trades, quite a renaissance man.
Well, I know you said
that you used to work on the docks and stuff like that. I was a mover. All right, so
you was a piano mover, though.
Piano mover, baby. Yep.
The piano mover, there's an art to that.
Oh, yeah.
Here's the thing. They're big-ass, heavy objects, and if you can't jack them up because you've messed up all the keys, and normally it's people with money that are moving pianos. You ever notice that?
Oh, yeah.
Ain't no poor people got a piano.
No, hell no. That, you know what?
I just shoot big cats. Yeah.
Here's where I'm going to lay it out for you like this. This is the best part about moving a piano, okay? Because when you walk into the richest person's house on the block and they got a piano, suddenly, when you show up at the door, they're powerless. Okay? Where the hell do you want that thing? Yeah. You know? Because I'm picking it up once, and where I put it down is where it's staying. And all of a sudden, they look at you like, who is this guy talking to me? Well, I'm the guy that came to move your friggin' piano. What kind of person did you think you hired? You know what I mean?
Did you ever have an incident where you just truly jacked up a piano, dropped one?
Oh, I've seen it, but I've gotten the hell out of Dodge on it. You know what I mean? We used to move pianos in New York City, and one time, it was like eight guys on a piano that was made of glass, and we were moving it for Alicia Keys. She was performing a concert.
Yeah,
they jacked it. Yeah. They were going up like 70 steps, right? And they got this one guy underneath, got it on his shoulder. I'm looking at this situation. I'm playing it smart. You know, I got a future here. I don't know about some of the guys I work with. I got my hands on the side, but all of a sudden I see homie's knees just start wobbling out on him. I just got out of Dodge. This thing went down like 70 steps, ended up crooked at the bottom. A few people were rattled, you know what I mean? Caused a big scene. I just went outside and had a cigarette. Ah, man, that was just something I was glad to be a part of because it ain't my piano and I'm still getting paid by the hour.
My wife had a piano. Well, she still got it, and she had it over in storage for a long time. And then we went over to look at the piano. She goes, man, that brings back a lot of memories. I sure would like it at the house. I said, well, that's cool. And she says, well, how should we move it? Can you do it? And I'm like, dude, I can move anything. I don't give a damn what it is. If you want me to move it, I can.
Hell yeah.
But because it was her piano, and I'm too smart to move a piano by myself. Now, I'm dumb enough to do a lot of things, but I don't mess with no piano. So, yeah, we hired the piano movers to come over and professionally put it in my entrance now so it's in the house. And I figured, well, my wife, since she got these musical skills, she's going to start playing that, and I can dig a little piano music. And she ain't played it since she got the damn thing at the house. So, honey, you need to start playing that piano, or we've got to get the hell out of the way. Quick note on the piano before I get over here to Big Cash's background before he heads over to NXT. I went out to dinner last night to Dakota Steakhouse. Had a hell of a damn ribeye with Kevin Nash. Drank a couple of bottles of wine, Prisoner, Cabernet. And there was some lady over there banging on the damn piano. You ever go to a restaurant? It's supposed to be a nice restaurant. And they beating the hell out of damn piano so loud, you can't hear yourself talk. So it was like, we're sitting at a round table right here at a table for four, just like me and Kevin was sitting at last night. And Enzo's across from me, directly across from the table, and I can't hear. We was talking about calling high spots in the ring. And so, hell, by the time it was over, me and Kevin was like this. It was like we was a couple. We had broke up, but by the time dinner was over, he was sitting damn near my lap so I could hear what he's saying. Anyway, enough about all that BS. Big Cass, former basketball player.
Yeah.
And you was what, a pre-med student?
Yep, pre-med.
Come on, dude, what were you going to do?
Well, I was pre-med, and my whole life I said I was going to be a doctor, but deep down I just knew that I was going to be a pro wrestler because that's what I always
do. Dude, there's not too many people who have two goals. On one hand, you want to be a doctor. On the other hand, you want to be a pro wrestler. Hell of a dichotomy. What do you do, flip a coin?
No. So after my junior year of college, after taking all the sciences, which would be chemistry, organic chemistry, physics, and biology, I had to take the MCAT. And while I was, organic chemistry still gives me nightmares. But I was studying for the MCAT, which takes like 6 months of preparation. And I just remember when I was studying for the MCAT, I thought, man, my heart just ain't in this. I mean, my parents were expecting me to go to med school, so I really put my best effort into it. But while I was studying, I said, I can't do 4 more years of this. So I took the MCAT, and after going into my senior year, I knew once I'm done with college, I'm going to start wrestling.
So then you're floating around. How'd you just go down to Florida and say this is the place to be, send in a tape?
No, so I started looking up wrestling schools in the area, and there were a few, but then Johnny Rod's school in Brooklyn came up at Gleason's Gym on Front Street. It's right under the Manhattan Bridge. So I went over there and visited and talked with Johnny, and started the next week and started getting my training there. And
what's your shoot height?
Shoot height, 6'9".
Okay, dude 6'9", walks in, Johnny Rod's got to think, okay, kid's got a look, got the size for it.
Yeah.
How serious did he take you? Because a lot of people want to get in the business, and they just ain't cut out for it. It's a very special breed. As you guys know, we'll get over to the NXT Performance Center. There's a bunch of damn, studs over there, athletic specimens. Yeah. So, just not anybody can make it in this business. But obviously, you got some size and a good look, good-looking kid. So does Johnny Rod see, hey, this kid might have some potential?
I think he did, because from the second I walked in, he paired me up with a guy that had been there a long time. They Bad Billy Walker. He was their cowboy, and on their shows, he was the main event guy. And so he.
What are you laughing about, Enzo?
Because my name was Cowboy Big Billy Young, because I was his nephew, Bad Billy Walker. So he immediately saw that potential. I mean, he put me with his top heel.
Yeah.
And I started training with him and being pretty much his heater. So he immediately saw something and said, okay, we got to get this kid, not fast track, but. Let's start throwing him in the mix a little bit right away.
Way from Queens.
Big cowboy from Queens.
Cowboy Bill Young.
I was from Lubbock, Texas. That's where I was booked from. Jesus, yeah, and I had to put on a fake accent and stuff like that.
Give me a Texas accent.
Oh, yeah.
This is brutal. He's in total Queens mode right now. Yeah. Hey, tell me a little bit about the Johnny Rod School, because he trained a lot of good guys.
Yeah.
So what was training like over there? How consistent was it? Because back in my day in the Dallas Sports Forum with Chris Adams, it was one day a week, and it was after the Saturday morning television tape, and there was about 30 cats in the class. And so ring time, as you can imagine, was pretty minimal, other than the tumbling drills, learning how to take a flat back, and then every now and then a little bit of chain wrestling, and then you was out the door. So what was it? Was it 5 days a week? What was it?
Johnny Rod's school is pretty much once you pay your tuition fee, you're a member for life. And
what'd it cost you?
$3,000.
That's a good investment.
Yeah, of course. And it's 4 days a week. You're not obligated to be there any of those days. And Johnny looks at who's coming in and who's working. And those are the guys that start making his shows. So if you're there, once every month, or you're just showing up one day a week, and that week happens to be the week of a show, he sees right through that. And he appreciates the guys that are coming in, 3 or 4 days a week, and he knows everyone's schedules to pay for wrestling school. They're working jobs, plenty of jobs, so he goes with the guys that are in there busting their ass.
I mentioned the tumbling drills and learn how to take a flat back from my school days. The same at Johnny Rod's, because you got to learn how to start bumping.
Yeah.
A lot of guys don't like the mat. All of a sudden, you're a basketball player. You're 6'9". Long guys, kinesiology and physiology works a little bit different when you're taking on those bumps. Did the mats bother you? Did the bumps bother you?
Yeah. So when I first – man, it might have taken me like 2 weeks to even start – bumping, and when I finally did, Johnny was there with another guy, Roger, that was at the school, and they just had me bump over and over and over until I finally got down a proper bump. But as you know, when you first start bumping and you're not taking proper bumps, everything's getting rattled inside, and you're just
that's
hurting all over.
Yeah, you start getting rattled. If you don't get the basis, you don't get the foundation, dude, you ain't going to last long. Because sometimes on those long tours, when things start getting sloppy, then you'll start, we used to go to UK for about 7 days, and we go right to Germany or vice versa. And some of those two-week tours, I mean, we were partying pretty hard back in. And so about 10 days in, the guys start getting a little sloppy, and that's when the injuries start. Yep. So you got to learn how to take a bump.
Now, snap back, flat back, yeah.
Enzo, tell me about, okay, so you're training over there with Joe DeFranco.
Yeah.
And I know a lot about Joe just from what I've read about him. I know he's a premier strength coach, and he works a lot with Triple H. But you over there training, he just moved to Austin, but he was in Jersey, correct?
Yeah, he's got a facility he partnered with Onnit.
Yep.
Out in Austin. I know
Taker. One of my sponsors.
Yeah, Taker's over there. Taker's, I've never been over there, but he's the only person I've actually talked to about it, and he says it's awesome. It's an amazing training facility over
but
there.
But tell me about Joe DeFranco. How'd you hook up with him in Jersey?
Was
that getting you ready to go to Salisbury Seagulls?
No. Well, actually.
Hey, respect to the Seagulls.
Yes, respect.
I'm cheering for him in the 17.
Coach Wood, Coach DeSpennett, you know, over there at Salisbury, shout out. But actually, my first year of college football, I played at Springfield College, where John Cena played college football.
Yeah, yeah.
And they told me that I had to leave because I was too awesome. So basically, I went there. I was 18, and, you know, I probably shouldn't have left home. But I got kicked out, rather short stint. And
why?
I'd rather not say, but.
Was you raising hell?
Let's get down to brass tacks. I was out there raising hell.
Okay.
All sorts of it, you know, and having a time of my life. I was just doing my time. You have never, ever in your life met someone who can cut corners like I can.
I got you.
I absolutely mastered. Okay, I have a degree in writing and journalism.
Yep.
I have literally never read a book in my entire life.
Come on.
Not one book. Not one. I always say, you keep reading them books, I'll keep writing them. All right? I've written 1,000 pages. I have 1,000 pages worth of promos that is in print. That I have physically on me at all times. I am a writer, but I will never read a book. It's just not in the cards for me. I can't sit down and do it. I got too much creativity going on in my mind. I say to myself, if I'm going to sit here and read this, why wouldn't I write something that can make me money rather than read it?
Yeah, but you get learners from reading books. Now, on the reading end of it, man, I said,
you can't teach me nothing, Steve.
You can't teach that. There's a reason why he says that. You can't teach it. I always tell people I have a hard time reading books. I never went to a doctor and say, hey, man, you know, I can't focus. I can't do this. I just self-diagnosed myself as ADD.
Oh, 100%.
Man, I'm sitting there. I'm reading a book right over there. Oh, yeah. I've been
I did a lifetime of, standing on my head in detention.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Dude, I'm reading a book right now. It's called Unbeatable Mind. I'm on page 80, and I've been reading the book for a while. I was in bed the other night. My wife, I was reading my book, and she goes, what page are you on? I said, 80. She said, 80? You've been reading that book for almost a month. And I said, and I had explained to her, I said, you don't understand. I said, it was a chapter about concentration, and it's one sentence, and I just read the one sentence, and before I'd even finish the sentence, I was already thinking about something over here. And so I had to bring myself back to it. I said, honey, I said, you understand, I got to read some of these pages 3 or 4 times before I absorb the information, or then I'm able to focus in and dial it in.
Oh, hell yeah.
So, yeah. Reading's hard for me, but anyway, back to Joe DeFranco. I know that a lot of guys that are about to go to the combine will have a successful college career, or they've trained with Joe for years, but a lot of times he'll get guys ready. How did you go in there and start training with Joe? Because I know he's been a very important part of Triple H's training.
Yeah, oh yeah, hell yeah. So I'm what we call an OD, an original disciple of Joe DeFranco's, and there's very few of us left who are still active in the sports world. One of them is Brian Cushing.
Yep.
Me and Brian Cushing, he plays for the Houston Texans. We both graduated.
He's been kind of beat up. Is he doing okay now?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure this year he's going to tear it up, but he's had his string of bad luck, because if you've seen his injuries, it's not like he's cutting and tearing his ACL. It's been contact injuries, you know, taking a helmet to the knee and, you know, things like that. So, but he'll be all right, and he'll bounce back, I'm sure. You know, he's Jersey tough, and he's a lunatic. And so I graduated high school in 05. About 16, I started training with Joe, who worked at a speed school, which were these new things that were popping up in the area called Parisi's Speed School. Joe was a trainer there. Joe left Parisi's, and I was one of the few guys that went with him to this closet in a town that I'm from, Waldwick. It was convenient for me, too. And I start training there. There's, you know, handfuls of guys that were NFL guys. You know, Dave Deal being, you know, all-pro left tackle for the New York Giants, played 10 years, 2 Super Bowls. He works in the back there. And Joe's just got this grinded-out atmosphere where guys are just putting in work that you never saw at Parisi's. It's like the people who are at Parisi's who were serious about college football, who were serious about training, who were serious about the NFL, they went with Joe. And the atmosphere just grew to a point. People saw the progress. People saw the results. And the rest speaks for itself, because now you see what Joe's doing. You know, partnered with Onnit, giant training facilities, you know, a list of NFL athletes who have either come to his facility, went into the NFL undrafted, outstanding numbers at combines, preparation, and just tearing people's heads off. And I was a part of that atmosphere. I played college football. I knew I wasn't going to make it in college football, but the whole time I was at Joe DeFranco's, I became known as EA All Day. It was a wrestling persona that I put on because everybody knew I wanted to be a pro wrestler. And that was it. That was always what I wanted
to
do.
When did you start watching?
I guess the earliest memory I have to date would be, you know, Shawn Michaels winning the Royal Rumble. And the leading up to it, I was watching Saturday mornings, you know, but as a kid, my parents didn't want me to know that wrestling was on TV outside of Saturday mornings. Okay. Then somebody gave me the Iggy. Okay. You know, there's more wrestling on. One of my buddy's older brothers. Next thing I know, you know, I'm watching, playing with the action figures. And Shawn Michaels was life to me as a child. Right. I mean, life. I mean, there wasn't wrestling. There was Shawn Michaels. And I eat, breathe, sleep, playing with his action figure all day and pretending I was him. So when he went over in a Rumble, and Pamela Anderson was the prize. Okay, I'm a little kid. I'm watching Baywatch. You know, you don't, you pretend you don't like girls, but I'm like, look at that thing. You know, that's a prime piece of real estate. And this guy just entered the Royal Rumble. You know, undersized guy goes in number one, wins the whole damn thing, skins the cat at the end, comes back in, throws the bulldog over. Pamela Anderson sitting in the middle of the ring. I'm saying to myself, this guy's the freaking man, dude. Who's better than this guy? That's exactly what I want to be. So when I was a little kid, they asked us to draw pictures in the school, what you want to be when you grow up. Kids are drawing firemen, kids are drawing policemen, kids are drawing all this stuff. And they're cardboard cutouts, and they connect them all down the hallway in your elementary school, every single grade, every single homeroom. I draw a picture of me with a vest that says sexy boy, yarn on my chest, hair, yarn, mullet coming out, long earrings hanging, boy toy written on the legs. These people let me do it. They're getting a kick out of it, all the kindergarten teachers and everything. They hang it up on a wall. Then they call my parents in for a parent-teacher conference. Like, look at what your son did. Well, it's already on the wall. My parents are embarrassed. They won't let me watch wrestling for a string of time. I'm out there super kicking kids on a playground, getting all sorts of trouble. Just, but I knew since I was a kid, that's always what I wanted to do.
But tell me about it. Okay, so then how old would you have been at that time?
Shoot, what?
95 when he won against, after going in number
about
one.
About seven? 7 years old.
Okay, then fast forward 8 years, because when you guys are both 15, y'all are playing hoops in the lots or the basketball courts of where? Because how far were you guys apart? How'd you guys just come upon each other? Because y'all been friends for a long-ass time.
Well, we met. The thing is, we met. We didn't know each other personally. We met. We remembered each other. When he saw me again at... I had my tryout at FCW at the time in October of 2011. He recognized me because a video of me playing high school football against Victor Cruz. I did like this little promo, and I slammed Victor Cruz a German suplex on the field, and I was talking smack, and he saw it on Barstool Sports because it was the week of the Super Bowl, and it went viral. So he recognized me on my tryout, but I had no prior wrestling experience. Then we got to shoot in the breeze and realized that we had met each other playing hoops in New York City.
At the Cage downtown. It's on West 4th Street. On 6th Avenue in New York City. It's a famous like street hoops type thing.
Right.
We weren't good though, so we were playing, you know.
Well, but speak due to for 6'9", yourself. You didn't have a game?
Well,
had to have more of a game than Enzo, with all due respect to Enzo.
I was big.
Well,
I was early bloomer.
But you wasn't tall.
Late bloomer,
and you can't teach that.
The thing is, I my freshman and sophomore year of high school, I was 5'8". I was a real late bloomer. Yeah,
boy, you ain't kidding. Someone poured some water on your ass.
Yeah. So I left sophomore year of high school at 5'8", and I just hit my growth spurt that summer. I came back for junior year, and people were doing double takes in the hallway. What the hell happened to this guy? I must have grown 8 inches in the summer.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah. And then finally, by my senior year of high school, I was 6'8". So I grew an entire foot from my stint to college. So when I was playing ball when I was younger, I was one of the smaller guys.
So we got a Shawn Michaels fanatic over here. When did you start watching the business?
My earliest memories are watching wrestling. My first show I ever went to that I remember vividly was in February 92. It was leading up to WrestleMania 8.
I love the way you guys drop these months and years. Y'all still I don't remember nothing.
No, not me. This guy
is
absolutely insane. So we know he's a pre-med student and all that stuff. Okay, his memory, he remembers dates, places, people. Every single like WWE pay-per-view you ever saw, everyone he's ever been to, he could tell you what city it was in, what arena it was in, what month of the year, what day it was.
So he remembers
insane.
Being born.
Insane. Yeah. I don't remember.
February 92.
Yeah. I've been to a ton of shows. I don't remember my ass from my elbow.
Yeah,
you know?
Me either.
So February 92, going into WrestleMania 8, there was Superstars at Madison Square Garden. I don't remember much, but I remember vividly Sid and Hogan had a bit of a scuffle at the end, and I was a big Hogan fan. And that's like my first memory of wrestling. And fast forward, then I became a Bret Hart fan, and then I was telling you the other day, I went to Survivor Series 96 in the Garden, and I went in as a Bret Hart fan. So, you know, I'm rooting for Bret Hart, but then all of a sudden during your match with him, everybody around me starts cheering for you. And I'm a young, impressionable kid before my teenage years, so I'm thinking, man, these are the cool guys. Looking around like, All right. These are the cool guys, and they're rooting for Austin. So that night, I switched from Bret Hart to Stone Cold Steve Austin, and ever since then, I was Stone Cold Steve Austin guy.
Oh, yeah.
It's interesting. What was your impressions of Bret Hart, Enzo? Because I was on YouTube last night, just like I was telling you guys. I was just sitting here, and I thought I'd do some research on you guys, but then all of a sudden, I start researching, and I start getting some interviews of other guys talking about Bret Hart's work. Bret Hart is a very good friend of mine, and he's one of the best workers to me in the history of the business. And there was a couple of guys kind of calling him out, saying, hey, man, he was just kind of one speed or one-dimensional. And I'm like, everybody, you know, wrestling is purely subjective. What you see as far as in-ring, you can interpret it any way you want. What you hear as far as music, it's subjective. Dude, when I look at Bret Hart, I mean, he was kind of a mentor to me, but just a guy that I had some great matches with and turned into to be a hell of a friend with. I thought the dude was phenomenal in the ring. And I can appreciate the fact that, you know, I was entertaining back, you know, when you kind of made the switch over to me. But, I mean, your thoughts, Enzo, if you're a Shawn Michaels guy, Shawn Michaels versus Bret, I mean, would you not agree that they're both hellacious wrestlers?
Oh, two of the best that ever did it, hands
correct.
Down. 100%. You know,
because if you didn't say that, I was going to throw you through this damn window.
No.
And we own eight story right here. You can take the window, you can take the stairs. I'm messing with you.
Yeah. I mean, as a kid, you know, I rooted for Bret Hart, and all you ever wanted to do as a kid was be in the front row and get a pair of his glasses, you know, when he came ringside, taking them off and putting them on kids' heads. And he looked cool. And, you know, it, beyond that, as a child, you know what I mean? You don't know what you're watching. You know what I mean? So
I like the realism of yeah. Bret's matches. That's one of the things that always intrigued me. He laid out a hell of a story, and it was just the realism. And, man, I always wanted to believe, like, when I bought in, I was 7 or 8 when I first started watching wrestling down in South Texas, Houston wrestling. And it was Dusty Rhodes, of all people, bleeding like a stuck pig in the middle of the ring, smoke-filled arena, Sam Houston Coliseum. I remember it was like it was yesterday. All the stuff I forgot, I do remember that. And I told my mom, she was over reading the magazine, the security guard was just strolling around, had a gun on his hip, smoke-filled arena, because you could smoke back in the day. I looked at my mom, she was reading the magazine. I said, God dang, Mom. I said, why doesn't that security guard help Dusty? She just rolled her eyes and, you know, went back to reading her magazine. Dude, I bought in. Even, you know, throughout my my later years when I had my first match, I wasn't really even smartened up, but I was such a fan of the business, you know. And once I was in the ring, every single thing I did or said, I believed to be real.
Yeah. So, you know, so growing up as a kid, obviously, like Bret Hart, was in love with Shawn Michaels. So when they started feuding, obviously I didn't like Bret Hart anymore. And then you came along and you ended Shawn's career. So I wasn't, you know, I was the biggest Steve Austin fan ever. Cut the 316 promo, Jake Roberts, loved it. You went and took out Shawn for a while, and I was like, oh, man. But when we look back, because we watch film more than anybody in the history of the business at the Performance Center. All right, you got, you know, 70, 80 kids, and some of them that more than others on their own free time. But not only that, you know, you run on the treadmill, you got matches on the WWE Network. They made it accessible more than it's ever been in the history of the business. So, you know, we are tag team wrestlers. I go back, I watch Bret Hart, I watch the Bulldogs, you know, I watch the Rockers. We watch a lot of that stuff, you know what I mean? And you learn to appreciate people's work more now than you ever would have as a child. You know what I'm saying?
In terms of the realism, a lot of Bret's work, it seemed more like a fight than a dance.
Yes,
right.
Exactly.
It seemed like what he was doing in there, it seemed to me as a viewer, he believed what he was doing was real. And yes. to me, that makes me think that it's real.
Uh-huh.
It didn't seem like a choreographed dance. It seemed like just a fight.
That's what I always appreciated about his work. Hey, man, we've all had those times when you need a little extra money, and I've got a really easy way you can make some extra money. Drive with Uber. I know you guys know all about Uber, and I know most of you have the Uber app on your smartphones already. But did you know that Uber and the Uber app can help you make extra money driving your own car? And the best thing about driving with Uber is that it's totally flexible. You make your own schedule. You decide when you want to drive. You decide how long you want to drive. Whenever you want to make some extra scratch, just turn on the app and drive. Drive for a few hours here, a few hours there. Drive for a ride, maybe two. It all adds up to great extra money fast. And it's really easy to get started. All you got to do to drive with Uber, all you got to do is go to drivewithuber.com to sign up for free. You can do it right from your phone, drivewithuber.com. You just answer a few questions about yourself and your car, and then you get approved. Once you're approved, you start driving. Told you it was easy. Start enjoying the flexibility of working when you want and earning extra money on your schedule. Sign up to Drive with Uber today. Go to drivewithuber.com. That's drivewithuber.com. One last time, and I will spell it out for you. Drivewithuber.com. Hey, I'm going to let you guys in on a little secret about TrueCar and the TrueCar app. You can use TrueCar to help you buy a used car. It ain't just for new car purchases. There are over 500,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide, and there are over 11,000 TrueCar certified dealers. And TrueCar lets you get upfront pricing information on new and used vehicles and lets you see what other people paid for the car you want so that you feel confident you're getting a fair price. With TrueCar, via their TrueCar pricing curve, you see what other people paid for the car and you lock in your guaranteed savings. Then you can connect with the local certified dealer of your choosing, take them your TrueCar guaranteed savings certificate, and make your car buying experience quick and easy. Over 2 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network, and TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar.com or download the TrueCar app to enjoy a better car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
Let's go over to the NXT Performance Center because I've been meaning to get down there forever. I haven't made it down there yet, but you guys are talking about all these matches you're able to watch. And obviously, pretty much Vince owns the library for everything. And so, man, I go back to some of my favorite stuff to watch. If I was doing cardio in my garage, is a lot of, you know, Arn and Ole down there in NWA when finally turned to WCW. Arn and Tully, you know, Rock and Roll, Midnights, Freebirds are very instrumental. Michael P.S. Hayes is a showman and a mouthpiece and just a vicious worker when it came down time to get the heat. And I'm glad he's going into the Hall of Fame this Saturday, tonight as we speak, because it's long overdue. Are any of those tag teams, I mean, and dude, you're damn near 7 footer, you're 6'9". Any of the teams I just named able to influence you in any way, shape, or form just because they're so much smaller than you? But as far as Anderson's cutting off the ring, teamwork with Midnight and Rock and Roll, stuff like that. Because I can't stand to see two superstars get thrown together and they're a tag team because they said it's a tag match, but they're not operating as a team. It's really four guys out there working a single, call it a tag.
Yeah, so right now, we were in the midst of a rivalry with Dash and Dawson.
Like those guys.
Yeah, and they do exactly what you were just talking about, just kind of body part and tag team wrestling. They're not just a throw-together tag team. They're boys, and they go in there, and they're not there to get pops. They're in there to just work a body part, get the sympathy on the baby face, so when that hot tag comes, it's hot. Instead of just, you know, throwing.
And you got to work for it.
That's basically what he's saying is when you look at the landscape of recent tag team wrestling, you go up and down the line and you watch this stuff, okay? That generation, Arn, Tully, those guys, NWA, some of the best tag team wrestling in the history of tag team wrestling, okay? As students of the game at the Performance Center, we understand that right now, you're talking about their name is the Revival, right?
Right.
You know, Dash and Dawson. Well, in its entirety, NXT, there's a Revival in tag team wrestling, because we go out there and we want to put on the best tag team match that we can. It is not about, you know, getting your shit in. It's not about the pops. It's about isolating the baby face, keeping them in your half of the ring. It's about building to the hot tag, not so much about the shine. The most important thing in that match is that people understand Enzo's in trouble, and he's got to get to Big Cass, and he's got to make that tag. And when we do, we want the roof to blow off. You know what I mean? So what we're doing is building towards a tag. It's more about the hope spots. It's more about getting closer to that tag than it is about getting your shit in on the front end and shining up the baby face. Because, I mean, let's face it, just in particular, me and Cass, we come to the ring, we got to shine on the microphone.
Right.
You know what I mean? But there's other guys, and the way that, you know, our heels, you know, Blake and Murphy, you know, Dash and Dawson, you know, and then our baby faces, Jordan and Gable, me and Big Cass, and then the vaudevillains who have, you know, been heel, been baby faces. We just try to isolate the baby face, build to this tag, and it makes for such a different match on the card than it would if you just had two singles competitors going out there, getting their shit in, doing things that don't make sense, getting put up on the top rope, hitting a drop kick and a double down, you know, things of that nature. We want to build to the tag.
To me, it seemed like you guys, for the most part, I went to the NXT show last night here in Dallas, Texas. I enjoyed it. I was out there hanging with the sound guys in that little booth, so I got the chance to watch it and feel it live. But to me, my approach has always been, whether I was single or in a tag with Flying Brian way back in the day, it was all about pretty much what you just said. I mean, it was about making the whole match good. And yeah, that includes shining the baby up and getting some shit in, but it's not like all of your trademark stuff. You know, you ain't going to get every single thing you do in right. on every single match. It just don't happen like that. So the story's told, grind down the heat, and he's fighting for the tag. Man, if he can manipulate that referee a little bit for a false tag and have him out of position and let you guys do that too much anymore, that's kind of a lost art. But going back to my original thoughts, it's all about putting the work in and building the damn thing. Because what sometimes if you'll watch, you know, and currently, or you could see it back in the day, you know, guys are out there trying so hard, they're playing to the crowd before it's time to play to the crowd. Work organically, keep the focus within that squared circle. The crowd will come if you're building what they want to see, and then that's going to lead to that explosion. But if you start egging them on like this from the get-go and begging them to come, you want them to come later. Yeah. You don't always have to do something to pop the crowd. Just you need to do something to hook the crowd.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
They need to be invested in what's going on.
Correct.
And especially in our tag matches, our advantage on the card is we have the hot tag. No other match, you know, there's other tag team matches, but as a tag team match, that's your immediate advantage walking into the building against every other match, the hot tag. So the most important part of the match, in our opinion, is the heat. You got to build to that tag. So it's not just a tag, it's a hot tag.
And the heat has to be severe enough or enough that warrants you want that. But you want the baby face to make the damn tag.
And you know what I hate is when you got 8, you go out on TV, or you got 10, you got 12, and you see the baby face shining up. You know, to me, the most important thing is that we get a good heat, because a good heat leads to that hot tag. And one thing about me is you'll see me selling, all right? You're not going to see me fighting back in the heat, because I'm not blowing a comeback for Big Cass. I don't want to ruin the comeback for Big Cass. So I'll evade. I'll move out the way. I rarely ever will hit an offensive move. Might throw a punch at your stomach, something like that. But I'm just trying to draw in the people. Let's blow the roof off with this tag. And we work with great heels down at NXT. Guys like Dash Dawson, Blake Murphy, Vaudevillains, so creative with eluding the referee and beating around the bush with these rules and, you know, stipulations that are within the context of what we do, that you can't, you know, hurt the referee. You get one save.
Can't bury the ref.
So we do these creative things. We're elusive in the fact that, you know, we're behind the referee's back. Or sometimes we do things that aren't illegal, but by the way we do them, the crowd would think it's illegal.
Right. You ever study very much Ricky Morton?
Oh, yeah. You ain't lying,
baby. You want to talk about selling.
Oh, yeah.
Keeping himself alive, and he would fight back. And that's the thing that I really loved about what The Rock and Roll did. Now, Robert was a little bit of a bigger guy, but not a big guy. And Ricky was certainly a smaller guy. But the thing about it is, he never worked cruiserweight style. He always got his shit in. I mean, he's gonna punch you. Now, finally, he'd go if he's working with Ole, he'd end up going to the beak. He'd use that nose of Ole's, and that was kind of be his Achilles tendon. But he just had that fire, and you know, he would keep himself alive. Yeah. It was always about getting Robert that tag.
Hell yeah.
You just stay alive, and then, of course, Arn would come in there and light him up with a gigantic hope spot, and then go back down. And boy, by the time they started working that leg, and just boy, maybe he'd pull that tape off and get some color. Man, the people were just coming unglued for that hot tag.
The hottest hot tag.
And so that's when shit's good. But I want to talk to you about, because you said, Big Cass, very, very important. You said you want people invested in that match. And so part of the investment in you guys' match is the fact, and I just caught the, I guess it was when the tag match from a month ago when you worked with Revival.
Yep. Yeah.
See, and that's the one that opened my eyes, because I knew you guys were around and I didn't understand what the soft was. We were talking about this the other day backstage, SAWFT, and we'll get to that. But part of the things that I liked about you guys as soon as you came down, it's been so long since I saw you, I was like, you started off, you got the stick in your hand, and you start talking about a bona fide G and a certified stud, or I'm getting it backwards, you can't teach that. This is Big Cash, 750. You can't teach that. And I was like, okay, I get it. There's some character development here. This ain't just a guy with the blonde gimmick hair, and he's got the black scruffy goatee, and then Big Cash with tall drink of water. You can't teach that. I said, okay, I dig it. And I put a smile on my face, because character development. It's just not a guy that's 5'10", 200, and a guy that's 6'9", 270. They got a gimmick. And so I was able to relate to you. How important do you think that is? Because obviously you're into it, because that's a big part of who you are. You're the mouthpiece, or a big part of the thing is you're the mouthpiece.
Yeah, you know, it's funny is because you, like you were saying with Bret Hart, and how to him it looked like it was a fight, as you were saying, Cass. It looked real to him, and you could tell when you watch it, right? Well, to me, the same goes for most of the greats in the history of our business and people that you watch. And to me, I remember when I debuted here at NXT, I thought to myself, this is my only chance, this is my last chance, and this is everything I've ever wanted in my entire life. And I felt like grabbing my you-know-what, sticking my middle finger in the air when I walked through that curtain. Because in my mind, I was like, you're not taking food off my mom and dad's plate. I'm about to get this money. You know what I mean? And when I went through the curtain, I said something that to me was real. I said, you know, everybody's a G till a G shows up. Everybody's real till a real situation shows up. Everybody's a G till a G walks in a room. Bada boom, realest guy in the room, right?
Right.
And in my mind at that moment, I was feeling it. Now, it was real to me. And John Cena just happened to be backstage that day.
Awesome.
He saw it. He stood up backstage, said, bada boom, realest guy in the room. And he thought it was funny. And he just inquired about me. And then he had us do a dark segment with him, me and Big Cass, Damian Sandow, or whatever. And so we hit it off from there, and we were on NXT. But to us, you know, as stick guys and guys coming out at that time, I had 4 matches under my belt. I was thrown into the fire by Dusty. They wanted a guy to go job out and get a little heat. Yeah. And Dusty said, put a damn microphone in his hand. All right, and there was people in that meeting room who said he's not ready yet. And he looked at him like, what the hell does he have to be ready for? He's going to get squashed, you know? And, you know, and then it just, yeah.
Pretty good point.
Yeah. So then after that, Cena calls us into the ring, and I call Damian Sandow, SAWFT soft. Cena asks, wait, what does that mean? And I said, soft? And then Cena repeats it. What is he, soft? And all of a sudden, the whole crowd starts saying it. And after that day, they just repeated it with us every single time. But the fans never saw that. So the first time the fans ever see me and Big Cass on TV and we spell out soft, and an entire arena says it with us, and you're at home.
600 people.
Yeah, 600 people. But you're at home and you're watching this in England or something, and you go, wait, what? Why did the crowd just repeat everything he just said? Because they've never seen us or heard us say it, but we did these dark segments in that intimate setting down there in NXT. And to us, me and Big Cass, it was like, this is real. This is the opportunity of a lifetime. This is what we were born to do, is just talk this, you know, schmack.
Yeah, but all it is, I mean, you guys both from East Coast, hey, man, turn it up. I don't see anything you're doing. You're being a louder version of what you are sitting here at this table with me, which is exactly what Stone Cold was, a louder version turned up. I mean, I didn't have to act to be that guy. I just turned up.
Yeah.
And so when you can do that, I mean, when it's real and you guys are the realest guys in the room and it's a shoot, it works. So tell me about you do this this video, and Joe DeFranco is training Triple H. He shows him the video, so Triple H says, "Hey, come down to the Performance Center." How does that story go?
So Joe DeFranco saw me. You know, I got done playing college football. I was moving pianos, and I was training, and I was looking for a wrestling school. But as I told you, in life and in you know, all things, I cut every corner there ever is, by all means. Like I told you, I debuted with 4 matches under my belt and no business being out there. But they fed me to the wolves. Back then, I cut corners because I wanted to go to a wrestling school, right? By chance, by some divine intervention, by a miracle of God, Joe comes to me one day and says, "Hey, you ever heard of this guy, Paul Levesque?" My jaw nearly hit the ground. So, excuse me? Wait, yeah. What? He's like, "Yeah, he left a message on my phone. He wants me to train him." And I remember chills flew down my spine. And I was like, "Joe, do you know who that is?" And, you know, like had to show him and tell him about it. And, you know, Joe gets to train in Triple H but doesn't really know much about the business or who he's training. To Joe, it's a client.
Right.
And he's going to treat him like a client. And he's a pro. You know what I mean? So they ended up establishing a rapport. And I watched it happen for about a year. And in that year, I caught all the footage I could on camera of me training at the Francos. And Joe knew it in the back of his mind. Like, what is this kid up to, you know?
So you had this plan, though?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So then finally, I got the footage together. I thought it was sufficient. I handed it to Joe. I DJed Joe's wedding. You know what I mean? I was a DJ, too. My father's a DJ. I come from a family of DJs and entertainers. And I said, "Joe, I'm going to give you this. All I'm asking is that you show it to Triple H, okay? Just show it to him. I'm not asking for anything more." He showed it to Hunter. Next thing I know, like a week later, Hunter calls me on my cell phone. Joe gives him my number. And Hunter goes, "Hey, we're going to give you a tryout, you know, out in FCW," explains it to me. I knew what it was because I did my research and everything, and I knew who the trainers were. And I was like, oh my God, okay. And I was like, "Joe, I got to go find a wrestling school and just at least get in the ring, take a bump before I go down there." Because, I mean, I'm a big fan of wrestling and the business, but I've never been in the business, and I don't know my ass from my elbow. And he says, "You know, we're gonna give you a tryout." So I go down there, and Triple H's advice was, "Don't go to a wrestling school. Don't do anything until you get there. And don't fuck this up." That was all he said.
But basically, he probably didn't want you to pick up any bad habits that they were going to have to retrain.
That was it. Yeah. Exactly. Don't pick up any bad habits. Go down there. They're not going to judge you because you never did it before. They're just going to give you a chance to figure out how to do it within a week. You know what I mean?
So you get down there. How's it go?
Well, God bless Norman Smiley. To this day, I still work with that man. I went down there. I had my tryout at the time. Dr. Tom Pritchard was the head coach.
Me and Tom used to ride down the road together in Nashville, yeah. Tennessee, not making any money. yeah. So how did that?
Big cast will give you more, you know, of that. But I only met him in that instance that week. But Norman Smiley worked me around. You know, he's a wizard.
Outstanding.
Moved me all over the place. Made me look like I knew what I was doing. Got me in a ring. I had a little like tackle drop down leapfrog practice match spot.
Yeah.
And, you know, then what really boiled down to is I don't know how to wrestle. How's the promo? I cut a promo. Dusty Rhodes pulls me aside when it's done, brings me in the room by himself, you know, tells me, "Hey, you got a lot of potential, kid, you know, blah, 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 blah." He's like, I'm going to put in the word, but you know that it ain't just me. You know, I don't know how your ass did in the ring this week. So that ain't the be all end all.
Now, big cast, starting off over at Johnny Rods. Here you go down to the academy, whatever you want to call it. How long did it take you to pick this up?
Oof, it wasn't easy, and it shouldn't be easy for anybody. You know, this, like you said.
It is for some people. It wasn't for me.
Yeah. Hitting the ropes, taking bumps, all that stuff, natural.
Right.
The psychology.
So you're athlete. Yeah. If you're going to run down and on a football squad and be that guy.
You show me how to do a headlock takeover. I did a headlock takeover. You know what I mean? But the psychology of what we do, understanding, not rushing, being fast as an athlete your whole life, taught to go full speed and learning how to slow down.
Yeah, well, there's time to go fast, but I mean, like, the biggest mistake a rookie makes when they're green is to go fast and rush.
Oh, yeah.
But, and there's time in the match when there is a sense of urgency, as in going for that tag and then certainly the comeback. And if it's Big Cass making the comeback, it's not necessarily go, bing, 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 bing. It's the intensity of it, and it can ramp up.
Yeah.
So you were down there already when Enzo shows up?
I was down there for almost a year when he came down for his tryout. And Enzo, I mean, look at this guy. He walks in the door and immediately everyone's like, F this guy. Like, who the heck is this guy?
Heat.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know how he did
it. Was it heat or was it just like, hey, man, this guy's a little extroverted, could we say? I mean,
he's
cocky, confident.
Loud, brash.
No, dude, I mean, you're a nice guy. I met you in the elevator the other day. You know, you're not an asshole. You have a presence.
Yeah, but you took me by surprise. I mean, I tried to explain to Cass. I think the words that came out of my mouth when I looked up, because I was looking down at my phone. The door swing open on the elevator, and it was crazy. I'm on the back of the bus today. I mean, I've met Hogan. I've met everybody since I've been here. And I said to Aiden and Cass, I was like, man, the only guy that I haven't met yet is Stone Cold. And that's the guy I want to meet the most. And I'm sitting there on the elevator looking at my phone. I don't even look up when the door's open. I hear, is that Enzo? I pop my head up, and I think I said, like, get the out of here. I couldn't believe it.
It was fun to meet you because I enjoyed y'all's act. So there you are. He comes in.
I didn't see him in the ring. I don't really know what he was doing then. But then we all had promo class together, and all the tryouts get to cut a promo in front of everybody. And I had seen a promo he cut on Barstool Sports earlier, so I know he had the gift of gab. But I just sat down, and it was in the back of the room, and he cut his promo. And I remember after he was done, I had a huge smile on my face. I said, man, I hope they sign this guy, because this guy's going to be money one day, and I'd love to be with him. So finally I saw his name on the list when he got signed. They put a list up who's going to be training in what classes the next week, and his shoot name came up. I said, oh, they signed him. The second he came in, we went to the Yankee game that day. I like immediately said, because it's not – I know what it was like for me when I first got there. It's not easy to find friends.
Right.
Especially being this guy.
Why is it not easy to find friends down there? Because it's so damn competitive?
Well, those were also different times. The business has changed down there.
Okay. Very, very competitive. And
FCW, small warehouse.
Everybody's got their crew that they ride with, and, you know, you're just going to –
clicked up.
Yeah, you're going to start riding the shows alone because, you know, you don't have friends. But so I know how that was hard for me. So when he came in, and especially being like he is, might rub a few people the wrong way. I took him under my wing, I guess, so to say. But, like – you know, I just befriended him. We went to the Yankee game that first day. And
tell him where we ended up sitting, though.
Yeah, we ended up sitting right behind the dugout because
well, I looked around and I said, this ain't Yankee Stadium, bro. I see three security guards. Our seats are up in a nosebleed, and I don't sit in nosebleeds. Yeah. We walk straight down at our elbows on a dugout. Yeah. Derek Jeter's walking out. A-Rod reaching out. How you doing?
Because at Yankee Stadium, those security guards will snipe.
Oh, yeah.
You'll walk down and you'll have someone tap you on the – excuse me, sir. Can I see your ticket? Oh, yeah. And then you know the gig's up. Oh, time to go back up to
nosebleed.
The seats.
Yeah, we made it through seven innings in that front row.
So y'all go to the baseball game. You hit it off. I mean, did you go back and say, hey, we were brainstorming while I was at the baseball game, jacking the good seats, and we'd like to be a tag team? Or did they see you guys as a unit? How did that come to be?
They actually tried – well, I'm not going to say who, but they tried to keep us apart
for a long time.
Wow.
I don't know.
I had a ton of heat.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, did I ever. And literally, for the right reasons and for the wrong reasons, you know, I'm just who I am. But at the same time, you know, I, you know, if I, yeah. This.
How close are you with Michael Hayes? Because I get a lot of Michael Hayes out of you.
Michael's good to me, and I think.
I mean,
I'm
a huge.
You know, he busts my balls.
Yeah.
He busts my balls.
Yeah, well, I mean, to me, I mean, you kind of cut from a similar cloth. Now he's the Southern version. You're the Jersey version of that area, but I sense a lot of PS characteristics in you.
That's
you
a know, compliment,
Dust,
man. Holy
I'll take that. Like you couldn't. I can't tell you how much. I mean, you guys could be a Hall of Famer tonight, and you know the Freebirds to me. I mean, going back and what? So that's the biggest compliment maybe anybody's ever paid me, and I'm here in Stone Cold. So, No, Michael Hayes is the man, and he cuts a hell of a promo to this day. I mean, he gives us those pep talks at NXT before we go through the curtain and when we close out a show, and he sends chills up and down people's spine to this day.
Dude, back in the day, it was 86, 87, because I was still playing football in North Texas State, and man, I had no money. You didn't get no money in college. You know the drill. So I'd drive down. I'd rustle up a couple of bucks, man. We'd go in there and drink beer, throw shit at the wrestlers. And you wait for that main event for the Freebirds to come on and take on the Von Erichs. And you have to understand, I mean, a lot of people just don't get how over the Von Erichs were in Texas at that time. And then all of a sudden, the Freebirds had come in, and they were friends of the Von Erichs. And then when they switched heel, you talk about heat. I'm talking about shoot heat. But I was already digging the bad guys. I mean, it's kind of one of those things where you love the Von Erichs, but you also hated the Freebirds, but you love the Freebirds because they were so entertaining. And here comes Mike with that long blonde hair, Bad Street was going on, or they might have been coming down to a Leonard Skinner song at that time. But he had that long rebel flag robe, that red secret robe, and he got on that second turnbuckle. Start gyrating his hips. I was like, the match ain't even started, but that was worth the $10 ticket that I paid just to watch the summits come to the ring. That's how entertaining it was. So I'm glad they're going into the Hall of Fame tonight because it's well-deserved, and they were so influential, and they played a big part. I didn't really mimic my style after them, but they were just as far as the foundation and what they made me feel was very important. Did you guys... When you just wanted to be in the business because you were there, potentially you could have a hell of a damn career as a single. You guys are thriving right now as a tag. Now certainly you could thrive as a single too, but right now the tag is here. How long do you want to stay a tag? Could you do this for your whole career?
Yeah.
Tags. I mean, sometimes tags. You know, in NXT the tag division is great. In WWE, on the main roster, in my opinion, this is me speaking, you know, they break up teams and they do this, that, well, and move the parts around. But how long do you guys want to be a tag team?
As long as, you know, the company allows. Yeah, as long as we're selling T-shirts and action figures. And as long as the company.
We're just getting started. So, I it's hard to look down the road that far because you never know how this thing pans out. You know what I mean? So,
when it gets stale, eventually it's going to be time to be like, okay. But for now, we're just enjoying the ride. And
you know, hey, there's, you know, obviously been tag teams that have made a career as tag teams. So you look at the landscape. Real quick, one thing, special on the Von Erichs on the WWE Network to anybody out there who's listening, the Sportatorium, the Freebirds, the whole story. If you haven't seen it, make sure you watch it.
How comfortable are you right now, Enzo, with your time in the ring now going into a match? 100% confidence?
Well, Cass can attest to it, and it's very strange because – I mean, I don't know what it is about me, and I'm, this isn't me, like, putting myself over, but I don't get nervous in life. I come through the curtain, but before I'm in Gorilla, I've never been, and when I'm in Gorilla, I've never been more alive in my life. And when I go through that curtain, I'm just fucking, I feel like I'm on fire. That's me.
Yeah, I remember specifically in London at TakeOver and in Toronto at Roadblock. Man, we're about to go into Gorilla, and I'm sitting there. Obviously, the nerves go away once we go through the curtain, but, man, I'm sitting there, and I'm so nervous. Like mouth starting to get dry, cotton mouth, like, drinking so much water. I'm like, dude, I'm so nervous. And all the time he says to me, what the hell are you nervous about, man? It's just, what are you doing? Why are you getting so nervous? And you could attest to it, dude. I get so worked up before we get into Gorilla, and then, obviously, like, I'm, like, freaking out, and then once the music hits, I'm perfect. Like,
we're
just fine.
We're very different.
But this, but because Enzo has this deep confidence, did that rub off on you? Because here's the thing: when I was with Brian Pillman, we didn't get a whole lot of chances on the stick. When we did, man, we were riding down the road. Brian was reading vocabulary books, trying to increase his vocabulary. Brian was a very smart guy. All of a sudden, man, we get on the stick, and I'm like listening to him. I'm thinking, well, what am I going to say to try to top that or even be in the same ballpark with. So Brian, to me, he was instrumental in the development of my promo. Does Enzo do that for you to a degree as a performer or make you feel more at ease as you keep getting more confident?
Yeah, he definitely helped me when we started out together because, you know, when I started at FC, I was very, very bad, horrible. And he came along, and then they made us a tag team, and now I'm going out there in front of crowds, and I'm feeling way more loose because he's doing most of the talking, and, you know, it definitely.
But he also had a lot more experience in the ring than I did. And he's saying he's bad, but he really, you know what I mean?
No, he was really, really.
No, but at the time when we started wrestling on TV, I had 4 matches under my belt. You probably had maybe 100 yeah. or something like that. But you know, he had more experience in the ring. So
he definitely helped me loosen up, and definitely I'm way more confident going through the curtain.
Yeah, and you got to be loose out there, man, because, you know, it's funny, man. When I got in WCW, I'd already been in USWA for a couple years, a year and a half, whatever, and I made WCW. It was like I was a pretty good mechanic in the ring, but, man, I was thinking I would be out there, and I was like, I never cracked a smile because I thought I didn't know you could be, you know, I thought everything was so serious. It was like death. Hey, man, this is a task at hand. I've got to have a good match. Dude, when you loosen up and just go with it and let it out, and don't worry about making a mistake. And when you're having fun, that crowd's having fun. And I'm not talking real, about just laughing and joking and I'm just talking about, hey, you know, hey, don't, you know, you're working that crowd. That crowd wants to be worked. Go out there and do your shit and work them and just have fun. And and that's when you loosen up and you fly by the seat of your pants and have fun like that, to me, that's one of the keys that a lot of guys never get. They're too uptight. They're too focused on not screwing up. Yeah. Hey, shit happens. Yeah, just go out there and have fun.
The Hunter story, you could tell it. The story Hunter told us about, you know, Steve, Ricky Steamboat, then I got 3 things and...
Yeah, we gotta get you guys to an appearance.
Yeah, so Hunter, you know, one time me and Cass, you know, we Hunter makes himself so accessible to everybody at NXT, and he's our boss. You know what I mean?
Right.
But he'll shoot the breeze with anybody who walks by if you stop and talk to him for a second after taping. You know, me and Cass are a little nervous, and we just want to just get a word with him. So we go over. You know, Hunter, you know, we just want to ask. You got some advice? Things you want to see us do? Da 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 da. And at the time, we're cutting promos and we're getting good reactions and stuff like that. But our work wasn't the best yet, you know, and I'm confident as I've ever been in my work. I mean, I'll go in a ring and I'll work on the fly with anybody, you know, who wants to call to me. I'll just play him, but I'm saying, Big Cass and I go up to him and he says to us, let me explain something to you. When I was, you know, Thunder Rising out in WCW, and I went Terror Rising out in WCW, and I'm watching, you know, Stunning Steve Austin and Ricky Steamboat having some of the greatest matches I've ever seen in my life in arenas with, what, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 people. Then fast forward 5-10 years later, and I'm working Austin in front of sold-out crowds, thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people watching millions on TV. And I say, Steve, what do you want to do tonight? And he says, I got 3 things. Figure out where to put them. Yeah, and that was his analogy for telling us, like, hey, you guys find what you do. You know what I mean? You don't need to do a lot. Don't worry about the in-ring work. It'll come, and you'll find your niche, and you just do what you do and be confident in it. And it was like kind of like a moment of realization where me and Cass were like, man, that was the coolest damn story I ever heard, but that was good stuff.
And a little bit more older school, and, you know, the business moves faster these days. So, I mean, it's cool if you could go out there. I'm holding my hand wide open. If you have a fishbone of events and you could, you know, kind of freelance the rest of it, that's cool. You know, but sometimes the A to Z thing, that's a little much for me because I can't be me. But the business moves faster. You guys are better athletes than us. The football has sped up, baseball has sped up, pro wrestling, sports entertainment has sped up. Last question before we get you guys out of here. Appreciate you guys coming over. I was live at the NXT show last night. The NXT movement to me is real. It's the same crowd to a degree, but it's a whole different crowd to a larger degree than the WWE crowd that shows up on Monday Night Raw. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Agree. It's 100%. Definitely a different.
I feel a vibe. And there was some energy there. I mean, it's weird because sometimes the crowd comes in at the most random moments, and they're going back and forth between, I mean, say like Sammy and Shinsuke last night, and a couple of matches they would just go back and forth. Well, between Asuka and Bayley, they would go back and forth. I mean, and it was weird because at the end of the day, if that crowd has left and they've had a great time, and they got their money's worth. But sometimes when you're out there and you're working a match and you're getting that middle or just back and forth feedback, it's kind of like, man, we're in the heat here. You know, I need you to start, you know, cheering for this damn babyface that we're beating the hell out of.
Yeah,
The fight forever chant.
Yeah,
I'd never heard that in my life.
I never. That's the first time I heard it last night.
Yeah, these guys are laid out, right? Doubled down, beat the piss out of each other. And I said to myself, I don't know if Shinsuke knows what the hell they're saying right now, but I know Sammy is laying there asking himself, I've never heard this chant before.
Yeah.
Fight forever. I pray that one day in my career, I get that deep in a cell, dripping sweat, red in the face, laying there, and I hear that. It's unreal.
Are you guys going to be a part of the show on
We got Sunday? TV tapings today.
Okay.
For NXT, and I think we'll be involved in that for sure. We got access tomorrow. You know, our coach, Matt Bloom, at the Performance Center, creates an atmosphere where guys want to work for that guy, dude.
Right.
I mean, Matt Bloom, I'm sure you've ran went down the road at some point or another. The boys want to make sure that they do him proud.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And we all go out there trying to put on for Hunter, too, who's our boss who gave us this opportunity, because we started at FCW, 10 fans, 20 fans. Now you just saw it last night. 10,000 people.
So clean out.
Getting blown off the place.
Yeah.
And me and Big Cass have had an opportunity to be a part of that from the get-go, really.
Yeah.
And to watch the growth of this NXT product, to see a guy like Matt Bloom come in, take control of the Performance Center, and to see this product that's evolving on TV, and Hunter and all the things that he, you know, said that he wanted to do, that we all heard, and you never want to say your boss is blowing, you know, gas, but then to see it happen, it's just, it's been unreal.
Goddamn, I was going to say this last question, but back to the grind, or back to the training camp at NXT, what's the process? Now you guys are a couple of year veterans. I heard word on the street, I mean, y'all constantly in the ring. Y'all got booths you can walk into and cut promos. Yep. Last night, man, a lot of these guys, big dudes, made me look like a shrimp. Y'all got some premier athletes in there. Yeah. Now, whether they turn into anything remains to be seen. Obviously, they're in the world-class facility. Triple H has gone on record. He expects a lot out of everybody because he's giving you the best of everything to learn. But for you guys right now, with where you are in your careers in that organization, what's the daily process for you? If you guys aren't on the road, they're at the school training, going through drills, you work in matches, what?
So for us right now where we're at, we'll come in and we lift after our lift, we'll shower up and then we'll watch tape with Terry Taylor, or we'll get in the ring with Terry Taylor. And we just go over, you know, very detailed things because we got the basics down, bumping, headlock takeover, stuff like that. And we'll just go over some very detailed things specific to each character, to each guy who's in his class. And his class is the elite class, which would be the guys that are on top at NXT and perhaps maybe going up to the main roster sooner than everybody else. So our process now is, you know, weightlifting, shower, grab some food, and then watch tape or get in the ring. And then, of course, some nights we have promos. And then if you choose to do so, you can get in the confessional, the mirror. That's our promo room with the camera. You film your promo, and then you can watch it right back on the computer screens outside. And right now, that's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, the schedule is usually, for us, weightlifting in the morning. Go home, pack your lunch, and go to the show because we work in
make the next town.
Yeah, go to the
then,
town.
Then got yoga in the morning on Friday.
Sometimes yoga.
Yeah, they got a
who's
yoga.
Doing yoga class?
I don't know what name because
but my point is y'all digging the yoga because I hear so many good things about it and from breathing. I was talking to a Navy SEAL the other day who was talking to me about the importance of breathing, and you know, because when my buddy DDP would always talk to me about breathing, I'm like, hey dude, I'm 50 years old. I ain't ran out of breath yet. I'm still here, but it's a different kind of breathing. Has the yoga been beneficial from a healing standpoint or what?
To be honest with you,
don't lie to me.
I don't do the damn yoga.
I probably should be,
but they have the yogas optional on Friday because they try to take care of the boys and everybody. They want everybody to feel good, you know, down the line.
Yeah.
And so they invested in this over the past few months with this yoga instructor. She comes in on Friday. I'm usually in there icing my hips, icing my neck and everything. So I'm usually not in there for that.
I'm not really a yoga guy myself, but I talked to this guy who was a Navy SEAL. He graduated number one in his SEAL Buds class, basic underwater demolition. And like I'm sitting there thinking, okay, this is one of the baddest dudes on the planet, and he does yoga, so I'm guessing it's pretty cool. Anyway, enough about the yoga. Good luck to the rest of you guys. Weekend here. Have fun. And it was good talking to you. Going back on the last thing that you were touching upon, Cass, it is those little things. When you're in that master class, elite class with Terry Taylor, Terry is phenomenal. So I'm down in gym the other day. He was very instrumental in my career at a young age, as he was for Triple H. It's the little things that mean a lot. Yeah, if you know the basics, that's fine. But it's that little shit that adds up, because I can be watching a match and all of a sudden I'll do just something that's like a shitty lockup. I mean, as basic as a lockup is, it's the attention to detail, it's the finer things, and when I shut off the record button, we can talk about a few of those things. But yeah, good luck with that, and it's nice to hear, you know, so many things being taught. It's funny because I thought when that school first started out, I didn't know how it would fly, because, you know, back in the old day when there were territory systems, you know, you would go into different territories. I mean, you know, you was on the job training, or the few different schools that were on, and that's how you got your experience, and it was kind of varied because you were learning from so many different people. But, you know, that school is, it's like going to Harvard, because that's what it is. And all of the students at Harvard are learning, if all of us three are at Harvard, we're in the business class, we're learning the same shit, but it's how we interpret that, how we, you know, translate that or make our tweaks to it, how we will each find success in the business world. But in the pro wrestling world, there they are, the best of the best, teaching you everything to do. Now it's up to you to go in and make it into your own, to become like, you know, the realest guy in the room, an original G, you know, all the stuff that you've come up with. So at first I didn't know how it would fare, but it looks like it's faring pretty well, because the NXT thing to me is alive and well and thriving, and the future looks bright for the business of, dare I say, sports entertainment. Piss on that, pro wrestling. All right, guys, thanks for joining me here this morning.
You.
Appreciate the cup of Starbucks, man.
Oh, no.
I told Enzo, we was texting last night, he said, I'll bring you a Starbucks. I said, all right, I'll take a black coffee, two Splendas, and a frog's hair of milk.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe replace the frog. Let's see you next Tuesday.
Yeah. We got to keep it family friendly. I don't want to heat on you guys. You got enough heat to begin with.
Oh, brother.
Big Cass, Enzo, continued success. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, everybody, give me the go-home cue. It's time to wrap up this podcast and ride off into the sunset. But before I do, I got to give a shout-out. I just got word on Twitter today that the one and only legendary Merle Haggard has passed away at the age of 79. I tell you what, I cannot tell you how many miles I've driven in a car going to a wrestling show listening to Merle Haggard songs. He is absolutely one of my favorite country singers of all time. He's influenced damn near every single country singer that came after him in the history of music. And I tell you what, Silver Wings and Twinkle Twinkle Lucky Star and You're Walking on the Fighting Side of Me and about 100 other Merle songs come to my mind as soon as you say Merle Haggard. Sad to see him go. He's a guy that I always wanted to see in concert. And here's a quick story for you. One time we was working down there somewhere in Indianapolis. It was at a smaller kind of a B-town. And we were staying at Larry Bird's Holiday Inn. And Merle Haggard was doing a twin bill with, of all people, Conway Twitty, who is another one of my all-time favorites, who left us many, many years ago. And I wanted to see that concert so damn bad that I damn near skipped the WCW show. I was with WCW at the time, but of course I wasn't going to do that. But a double bill with Conway Twitty and Merle Haggard singing together on the same stage or just being at the same show, both of them performing all their badass hits. Now that would have been a night to remember. Could I have made that show and made my match and wrestled whoever the hell I was supposed to wrestle? But I never saw either guy in concert. But like I said, I've driven halfway across the world listening to Merle Haggard and obviously Conway too. And rest in peace, Merle. You're one of the greatest of all time, and I will miss your music. And every time I used to get into an airplane and head on down the road, Silver Wings was a song that always played upon my mind. And I've never told you that, people, but that's just a straight-up shoot. I got on YouTube, and I just typed in Merle Haggard, Silver Wings, about 2 minutes and 39 seconds. And you can see Merle play live on YouTube, but give you something to watch. Just type in Merle Haggard and listen to one of your favorite songs. Swig a beer to one of the all-time
country music legends. Sad to see him go. He influenced and inspired many, many people. Rest in peace, Merle. Hey, folks, congratulations to the Redneck Island Season 5 winners, Riley Green and Becky Andrews. They outbattled all the other Rednecks to take home that $100,000 cash prize. It was a great season. Had a lot of fun with my co-host, Melissa Rycroft, out there in my cabin on Lake Hartwell on my Kawasaki jet ski, riding around, out there getting lost, the fastest jet ski on the planet. And keep watching Broken Skull Challenge on CMT every single Saturday, 8, 7 Central. It's the toughest damn show on TV, bar none. Make no bones about it. It is what it is, and it's all about coming out there and proving you are a badass. Hey, man, check out Broken Skull IPA at El Segundo Brewing Company, 140 Main Street here in El Segundo in California. You can find it at Whole Foods Total Wines. Check it out InsideTheCellar.com. I can also tell you about the Steve Austin Broken Skull Knife done by Cold Steel. But anything you want that I'm involved with, you can find at BrokenSkullRanch.com. Scroll down. Everything's there. The website is up and running. Many thanks to Brian Bentley. He's the man that set it all up for me. It's simplified. It's easy to navigate. And if I'm involved in it, you will find it there. Bottom line is, folks, I want to say before I ride off in the sunset, thank you for supporting the sponsors of the Steve Austin Podcast, because they're the ones letting me do this for you free twice a week. So big thanks to ddpyoga.com/Austin and the DDP Yoga Now app, to DraftKings, use my promo code Steve to play for free, to TrueCar and Uber, and thanks to Amazon. They've been around since day one. If you want to help me out, use my Amazon links whenever you're doing any online shopping, because Amazon will kick back a couple of bucks to the podcast, and that helps us cover our production cost. Easiest way you can find my Amazon links to UK, Canada, and the USA is go to podcast1.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page, then hit the Steve Austin Show button. All my Amazon links and sponsors are there, and if you bookmark it, it will make it a lot easier for you to facilitate that process, support the podcast. We continue to deliver two cans of audio whoop-ass each and every single week. I'm going to be doing a Q&A coming up here pretty quick if you guys send me some different questions. Anyway, I've got some other guests lined up. I think you're going to dig. And keep listening, because the 60-second AP news headlines are coming up next. And until next time, my name is Steve motherfucking Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
Download new episodes of Steve Austin Unleashed every Thursday at podcast1.com. That's podcastone.com.